Our guest this hour says the conventional wisdom that special interest money is corrupting politicians and buying their votes is wrong. He says it's the other way around. He says it's the politicians who are compelling donors to hand over big bucks and engaging in a legal form of extortion. So what do you think of that? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, November 1st. We will talk with the author of Extortion about the various maneuvers made by politicians in Washington to raise money and funnel that money to their families and friends or themselves. You may have seen this topic and our guest featured recently on 60 Minutes. And you may have some questions or reactions on how he says business is conducted in our nation's capital. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Peter Schweitzer, president of the Government Accountability Institute and the William J. Casey Fellow at the Hoover Institution. He is the author of Throw Them All Out, which is about congressional insider trading, and the newly released Extortion, How Politicians Extract Your Money, Buy Votes, and Line Their Own Pockets. Good morning.
Hey, well, good morning. It's great to be on with you again. Thanks for having me.
Yes, it's good to have you back. We did talk to you about the insider trading issue. Now let's talk about this one. I know we have the whole hour, but generally, how do politicians extract our money, buy votes, and line their own pockets?
Well, it really comes to the fact that members of Congress, have increasingly great power, and they have the power that can do great things, good positive things for companies. I would classify a lot of those things as sort of crony capitalism, where they are doling out favors, but they can also do bad things. They can really hurt and affect the health of an industry or of a company, and companies know that. And there have been surveys done that ask business executives, why do you give donations to politicians? And more than half of them say that the main reason they give is that they fear, that's the word they use, fear that if they don't make the donations, bad things will happen to them and to their businesses. And you also find that a lot of businesses make donations to both sides in equal amounts. They will literally cut a check to both candidates in a race, the Democrat and the Republican, which when you talk to these executives, say it's basically protection money because they figure if they give, they've got all bases covered, and then they don't have to worry as much.
Let's talk about some specific examples. You mentioned in a New York Times piece about this, I guess, the maneuver. You call one of the maneuvers the toll booth, and you say that House Speaker John Boehner appears to be a master of the toll booth. What's the toll booth?
Yeah, the toll booth really comes as a function of being the Speaker of the House or being a leader in the House because they have enormous power. And, you know, as I say throughout the book, this is not really a question of, like, one person being really bad. It's a systemic problem. Whoever is Speaker of the House is going to use this technique to some level or another. And the toll booth basically works like this. Let's say that there's a bill that has widespread bipartisan support from both Democrats and Republicans, and it's passed out of committee. Committee members have voted on it. It's got unanimous support. Now it goes to a full vote on the House floor. Well, when that vote is held, and indeed if that vote is held, is determined basically by the Speaker of the House and the leadership. And the toll booth is exactly like it sounds. If you want a bill to go further down the legislative highway, even if it's passed out of committee, you're going to have to pay. And I cite numerous examples in the book where literally a bill passed out of committee in, say, July of 2011. It went on and on and on with no floor vote scheduled. Only after 35 executives just coincidentally decide to write checks, literally the next day the vote on the House floor is scheduled. And that pattern goes on and on and on. And to me, that is a form of extortion because, you know, we shouldn't have toll booths in our nation capital. These are supposed to be, in effect, public highways. Their job is to perform these legislative functions and to hold full votes on the House floor if indeed a bill does come out of committee. And they should not be charging or extracting money from people in order to hold that vote.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about how Speaker Boehner has reacted to your book in just a moment. But let's talk about another maneuver that you say Beltway insiders call milker bills. What are those?
Yes. Well, first of all, milker bill has absolutely nothing to do with the dairy industry.
Mm-hmm.
That's something to clear up. A milker bill is a bill that is introduced by a legislator, a member of Congress, or a senator that has really there's no intention on the bill actually becoming law. The basic purpose of the bill is to milk donations and or lobbying contracts for family and friends. And so you craft a bill. The bill generally will be designed to scare the daylights out of an industry or industries, or it could be a bill that one industry really wants and another one doesn't, and your sole purpose in introducing it is to extract those donations. And I'm convinced that this is the reason we see so many bills introduced every year that really end up going nowhere. We have, you know, lots of debate, we have lots of fanfare, we have lots of noise and fury that comes out of these bills, but they just disappear, and then they are only to be reintroduced next year, and they're really clogging up our legislative system. So milker bills serve that purpose, and they can be enormously lucrative because, again, the ability of a member of Congress to rain down favor or to destroy an industry is very real, and so they feel the need to make these donations.
And the example you gave had to do with President Obama and Vice President Biden creating a fundraising arms race over what? Are you there, Peter Schweitzer?
Yes, I'm sorry. I lost you there for a second.
President Obama and Vice President Biden engaged in this milker tactic.
Yes. It certainly they engaged in it, but also members of Congress from both parties sort of down the line did as well. And the example I cite in the book, and there are others, is the Stop Online Piracy Act of 2011. This was a bill that Hollywood really wanted, and this was a bill that basically would hold online companies like Google, for example, and Microsoft accountable for websites that are selling or giving away pirated intellectual content. Hollywood wanted this. The online community, Google and others, thought this was the apocalypse, that this would absolutely fundamentally destroy their business models. So you had two enormously wealthy industries up against one another. And literally, they played it perfectly, at least from the standpoint of extraction, if not from lawmaking, which is they sort of sat on the fence and said, we're wondering whether we should sign this bill or not. And they kept this up for 11 months while they, in effect, created this arms race between these two powerful industries. And it was really only after, and this is based on the testimony of executives in Hollywood, it was really only after the Hollywood executives were tapped out, that they had maxed out their donations, that the administration came out at the 11th hour and 55th minute and said, well, we've decided we're not going to support this bill. And it created a lot of resentment among the executives. They were certainly not the only ones that did that, the Obama administration. You had Republicans and Democrats in the House doing it as well. And from the standpoint of a so-called double milker bill, it was perfect because both Hollywood and the high-tech community are very wealthy. They hired a huge number of lobbyists, and they wrote a huge number of checks to both sides.
How is this legal?
Well, it's legal because they basically set and define the rules of how things work. The example I used at the beginning of the book, Joy, is of what used to be a problem in urban America called the squeegee men. And it was basically somebody would stand on a street corner and they'd have a squeegee, or they would have a rag in one hand and they'd have a brick in the other. And they'd say, hey, let me clean your windshield. And everybody knew that if you didn't pay them to so-called clean their windshield, which meant just rubbing it for a second, they would probably smash that brick against your windshield. Well, that was outlawed, and that was dealt with. But it's very similar to what goes on in Washington, D.C. It's just that they're better dressed, they're wearing suits, and the brick may not be a literal brick, but it's probably even more damaging in that these bills can really damage and hurt companies. And what it is it's a reflection of the fact that lawmaking and money making in Washington have really become intertwined. And what I argue is we've got to come up with new and very specific ways to combat that.
Well, we'll talk more about that as we go along. We are talking with Peter Schweitzer. He is the author of Extortion: How Politicians Extract Your Money, Buy Votes, and Line Their Own Pockets. How do you feel about this? Are you surprised by what you're hearing or not really? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. According to our guest this hour, special interests don't bribe and buy politicians. It's the opposite. We are talking with Peter Schweitzer. He is the author of Extortion: How Politicians Extract Your Money, Buy Votes, and Line Their Own Pockets. We welcome your questions and your reactions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So, Peter Schweitzer, is this to say that it is not a problem that special interests will make big campaign donations because they want a representative to vote a certain way?
No, absolutely. That does take place. I've been a very strong critic of what I call crony capitalism, which is, you know, an industry comes in and they want a favor, they want some benefit, they want some set aside, they want government money, they want, you know, any number of things, favorable treatments. That is absolutely a problem. And I think we've done a lot over the years. It's certainly not perfect. We've done a lot over the years to focus on regulating the people that are buying influence, which is those outside interests, whether it's big corporations, big labor, whoever you want to identify. The question, though, is that the only problem? And I think that a focus on simply regulating the buyers of influence is not enough. We need to focus on the sellers of influence, which are the politicians. Because I do think there are a lot of companies out there, the high-tech industry, for example, would certainly be one, who by and large want to steer clear of getting involved in most political issues, if not all. They're focused on innovation. They're focused on being competitive. But, you know, as one executive I interviewed, a former chief operating officer of Microsoft, put it, you know, you may not be interested in Washington, but Washington will become interested in you. And they become interested in you when you become a successful, wealthy industry. And that's certainly what has happened to the high-tech industry. They have been drawn into the political process by politicians because there's a huge amount of money there for them to tap.
All right. So Congress members, others may be saying, give me money if you want me to bring this bill to the floor or if you want me to sign this particular bill into law. But how are they lining their own pockets with this?
Well, that's a great question. You know, when we think of money in politics, we focus overwhelmingly on the fact that, you know, people raise, you know, the Peter Schweitzer for Congress committee, and they raise money and they use that to, you know, put up yard signs or buy television ads, and that certainly takes place. But, you know, this is unfortunately a pretty clever group, and I think like really any other segment of society, they tend to be self-interested, and they are focused on what they can get for themselves. So they have created these campaign committees that have much looser rules about how campaign money can be used. If, for example, the you know, Peter Schweitzer for Congress committee, a traditional campaign committee, if I were to set one up, the Federal Election Commission has very, very specific and detailed rules about what you can and can't use that money for. Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. of Chicago is actually in jail because he used campaign committee funds for personal personal use. In this case, he bought things, for his home. But if you set up what's called a leadership pack, and a leadership pack is something that the vast majority of members of Congress now have, a leadership pack really does not have restrictions on personal use. So you can use that campaign money to take your family on a trip to Europe, which has been done, to pay for limousine service, which is done all the time, which you can use it to buy sporting tickets to go to BCS college football games or Yankee games or NFL games, you name it. That has certainly been done. You can use it to go to very expensive restaurants to buy wine. There's a member of Congress who even spent $800 on cigars and listed it as an office supply through his leadership pack. These are all things that are right now legal and, frankly, even deemed ethical by the ethics committees because they have created this loophole. So we need to recognize money in politics is not just about election and reelection. It's become about a lifestyle subsidy for politicians.
60 Minutes correspondent Steve Croft did a segment with you a couple of weeks ago on this topic. He tracked down Democratic Congresswoman Grace Napolitano about an 18% interest rate that she charged her campaign on a loan. Describe what she did, and then we'll hear what she had to say about it.
Yes, I mean, this is, again, another example of how they can be very clever about creating money for themselves. So Napolitano ran for Congress in 1998. She loaned her campaign $150,000 cash. She then charged her own campaign 18% interest a year, and she waited more than 20 years to actually pay off the loan, which means she accumulated hundreds upon hundreds of thousands of dollars just in interest itself. It really is, frankly, an annuity for politicians. It's a guaranteed return on investment, and there's an estimated at least 15 other members of Congress from both political parties who are doing the same thing.
Let's take a listen to her explanation.
It isn't like I've really profited. I still live in the same house. I drive a small car. I am not a billionaire or a millionaire, for that matter.
Did your campaign contributors know that you were paying back a loan, charging the campaign committee 18%?
Well, you don't go out and publicize that, but they know that I had a campaign debt.
So that was to pay off a campaign debt?
Yes, the campaign debt to herself. And if you look through the FEC records, she was certainly in a position to pay off that debt earlier. They just chose not to. Because for her financially, look, I mean, if you told me or if you heard the same thing, look, here's a way, give me $100,000 and I can get you 18% return on your investment every year. Who does not want that investment, especially since that investment is basically to yourself? So, you know, this is another example of how they have found a way to turn and convert campaign donations into cash into their own pockets. And I think it's just a loophole that needs to be closed. You know, our fear for a long time has been, you know, wealthy people come in and just spend their own money on their own campaigns. That, to me, is a lesser problem than politicians coming in and loaning their campaigns money and then slowly paying it back and charging them exorbitant interest rates, because that's money that ends up in their pocket. That's their money.
In another case, there's Republican Congressman Rodney Alexander, who's now retired. He apparently paid his two daughters $130,000 to work on his campaign, in a campaign that he only faced a token opposition. Steve Croft caught up with him, and this is what Rodney Alexander had to say.
I mean, to some people, it just looks like you're using your campaign fund to enrich your family.
Well, somebody has to do that work, Steve.
So you kept it in the family?
Well, I kept it with somebody that I can trust. And if one can't trust their daughter, then who can they trust?
So how common is that story?
That is very common. There are estimated about 80 different instances, 80 different instances where members of Congress have family members on the payroll. And that is includes their regular campaign committees. There's not a restriction on that. Their leadership PACs. Ron Paul, congressman from Texas, who's also a presidential candidate, had on his leadership PAC six family members on the payroll. And the defense and the argument that you often hear is, well, we need people around that we can trust. And I can certainly understand that. But the problem is that in the case of Rodney Alexander and many, many, many others, family members tend to show up on the payroll when they're in a race that's not very competitive. So the question becomes, if they're good enough when you're not facing any serious opposition, why aren't you hiring them when you do face serious opposition? And I think it's because, look, if they're not facing serious opposition, they can still go and extract donations from industries and other individuals, and their thinking is, why not end some of that back up in the family? So it's a very, very serious problem. And again, that is legal and deemed ethical in Washington.
An aide or spokesperson for Speaker Boehner, Brendan Buck, said in a statement that you, Peter, should probably read Congress for Dummies before you start making bogus and salacious claims to sell books. What's your response to that? In less than a minute, we can pick up after news.
Yeah, no, my response to that is, you know, the facts speak for themselves. I mean, if Mr. Buck's opinion is that on the eve of votes being scheduled, that it, you know, that there's just a spontaneous collection of donations by industry executives because they just are feeling the love for the speaker, then he must think we're pretty naive. The big problem with donations is the timing of donations and the fact that large money is collected right before the toll booth is erected and those donations are made and then the legislation proceeds. That timing is simply a matter of fact, not a matter of interpretation. And I don't think he can expect us to be that naive.
Our guest is Peter Schweitzer. He is the author of Extortion, How Politicians Extract Your Money, Buy Votes, and Line Their Own Pockets. And we'll continue talking with him after the news. We are talking with the author of Extortion, How Politicians Extract Your Money, Buy Votes, and Line Their Own Pockets. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 7:37 on this Friday, November 1st. Peter Schweitzer says that special interest money may be corrupting politics and buying votes, but it is also goes the other way around. It's politicians who are compelling contributors to hand over big bucks. Talking about a legal form of extortion designed to extract campaign contributions, and then in some cases they funnel those funds to friends and family and themselves. We welcome your questions. We welcome your reactions to this. Is this surprising at all? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. What do you think it's going to take to put an end to these shenanigans? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Peter Schweitzer is the president of the Government Accountability Institute and the William J. Casey Fellow at the Hoover Institution. He is the author of the newly released Extortion, How Politicians Extract Your Money, Buy Votes, and Line Their Own Pockets. Okay, Peter, we've spent the first half hour of the show talking about what's happening. And now, how do you know this is happening, by the way? How did you research this?
Well, it's a great question. You know, I wrote a book a couple years ago that I was very privileged to be on your show to talk about, Throw Them All Out, which looked like a look at congressional insider trading. And I looked at the whole issue of crony capitalism, too, about people who were, you know, in effect giving donations to politicians to get certain benefits or legs up for their companies or their industries. And as I started interviewing industry people about it. They said, look, yes, this is a problem, that there is bribery, in effect, taking place, but there's also extortion taking place. And so I started talking to executives and saying, well, what do you mean and how does it work? And they sort of laid out this pattern. What was interesting was I could not get anybody who is a current executive to talk about this on the record. What I did do, though, was get those who had been executives who are now out of business, whether it was a former president of Shell Oil or a former chief operating officer of Microsoft and others, and they sort of talked and explained about some of their experiences and how they had worked.
Yeah. If you can remember it, it actually made me laugh. I maybe shouldn't have, but what a film executive said about President Obama and the whole milking controversy over the Stop the Online Piracy Act.
Yes, yes. He basically said, if I remember the quote you're talking about, that he drove over us and that he backed up and rolled over us again. And, you know, in Hollywood, this was a huge problem. You know, when we think of Hollywood and money in Hollywood, we tend to think of celebrities. But a lot of the money comes from the so-called suits, who are the executives in the industry. And they felt extremely betrayed because they were led on, or they believe they were led on, to believe that the administration was going to support the Stop Online Piracy Act. There's certainly been a lot of indications of that. And this arms race between Hollywood and the high-tech industry, it was sort of the suits of Hollywood against the khakis of Silicon Valley. This arms race raised a huge amount of money, tens of millions of dollars, for President Obama's campaign. Congressional Republicans and Democrats also raised a lot of money with this technique. And, you know, that's one thing to sort of underline here. This is not a case where one party is doing this. In fact, I believe that when it comes to sort of this sort of business side of politics, there's a lot more collaboration than there is conflict. I kind of liken this part of the business to professional wrestling. You know, if nobody has ever watched professional wrestling, has had no exposure to it, when you first see it, you see these two big people in spandex, you know, hitting each other and throwing chairs at each other, and you think, gosh, these guys really hate each other. But then after you get familiar with sort of, okay, now I know what the shtick is, you realize that, no, actually, they're business partners. This is kind of all an act. And when it comes to milker bills, extracting money, getting contracts for family and friends, it is very much professional wrestling. The conflict between Democrats and Republicans is not nearly as fierce as one would think. And in a lot of ways, they're actually cooperating together.
Do you think that the toll booth or the milker bills or any of these maneuvers had anything to do with the government shutdown and the debt ceiling drama?
I don't think that those specifically did. I do think that, you know, look, there was an underlying problem. If you look at the incentive structure in D.C., it is all about crises and conflict. One of the executives I interviewed, and I think he made a very good point, I think he's right, is he said, look, if you think about D.C. as a business model for the people that are there, there is no money to be made. There is no incentive to solve problems. You get donations, you get lobbying contracts for families and friends, you get perks when there's craziness going on, when there's conflict going on, when there's crisis going on. If problems are being solved and everything's being run smoothly, people aren't going to write you a check. People aren't going to hire your second cousin as a lobbyist. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. So in the case of the government shutdown and the debt ceiling, there wasn't a specific milker bill per se that targeted an industry, but there's no question that as this was going on, both sides were, you know, furiously raising money from their base, and both sides were raising a lot of money in that manner. So, you know, I think that has to be taken into account, and we have to fundamentally change the incentive structure because I do believe people respond to incentives, and you have to, you know, look at unfortunately, their basic selfish interest, because that tends to be a prime motivation to ensure that they're incentivized in a way that allows them and encourages them to do good things rather than destructive things.
We have callers that I really do want to get in on this, but what do we do to change the incentive structure?
Well, you know, nothing's going to be perfect because, as I said, these are very motivated and clever people. But I propose a couple of things in the book. The first one is we should get rid of these slush funds, these leadership PACs that can be used for personal benefit. So I think at a minimum, we should apply the same restrictions to regular campaign funds that we do to these leadership PACs. The second thing I call for is what is done in 27 states around the country. And unfortunately, I'm not familiar enough with Wisconsin. It may apply there as well. But in the state of Washington, Florida, Texas, and a bunch of others, they have a very specific restriction on state legislators. And it is when the legislature is in session, you cannot, as a politician, solicit or receive campaign donations, period. It's not perfect, but what it does do is it separates lawmaking from moneymaking. I think if we did that in Congress, two things would happen. Number one, Joy, they would suddenly become terribly efficient with their time. You wouldn't see them up there month after month after month with nothing really happening. They do that because, again, that's how they can extract donations and money. It would force them to be efficient, if for no other reason, because they would want to go and do more fundraising. And I think the second thing it would do is it would sort of create some space, at least some space, between the money-making and lawmaking. Right now, literally, they will on the evening of an important vote, say to the energy industry, they will hold a fundraiser the night before that vote and say to the lobbyists, you need to cough up. I mean, it's that explicit. They will walk from the House floor during debate on an important bill, step outside, get on the cell phone, and solicit donations. That kind of behavior, I think, has to stop, and this kind of reform would go a small way in helping them do that.
Let's take some calls. Charles in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Charles. I'm sorry, it's Charlie.
Yes, thank you very much. My comment is more that we are electing dishonest people. I think of Obama recently with the healthcare thing, where he's been showed to have lied to everybody. Everybody agrees. And when I was discussing it with someone who is actually for the Affordable Care Act, they said, well, all politicians lie. Well, if they're going to lie and we are going to allow that, aren't we also saying, well, they can do other things like extort money or line their own pockets or do or go along less than moral things? Shouldn't we be demanding honesty and truthfulness in our politicians? And that's part of the solution. Thank you.
I think Charlie brings up a great point, which is there is a remarkable amount of cynicism out there that everybody does this. And I've been accused of contributing to that. That is certainly not my view, that everybody does this. But this is the culture. This is the predominant culture. And I do think that, you know, politicians are going to rise to the level of expectation. And I think that regardless of what side of the political spectrum you are on, I mean, you know, full disclosure, I come from sort of the more conservative / libertarian side of the equation. But, you know, if we get into a mindset, if either side is in the mindset of, yeah, our guy lied, but he's our guy, so I'm going to defend him, or our guy self-enriched, but he's our guy, so I'm going to defend him, this is what we're going to get. And they play to this. I mean, they know, both sides know, that their base will tend to go along and tolerate a lot more from them than they will from the other side. So I think the caller brings up a good point. I think both sides need to have a zero tolerance policy when it comes to self-enrichment. And we need to recognize it's not just a question of getting, I think, a better person in to any particular office, because unfortunately, the way that the culture of D.C. functions right now, it's enormously difficult for people to resist the culture, and they become part of the culture. So I think the caller's right, but we cannot become so cynical that we just sort of throw up our hands and say the cause is lost, because it certainly is not.
Our guest is Peter Schweitzer. He is the author of Extortion, How Politicians Extract Your Money, Buy Votes, and Line Their Own Pockets. What do you think of this, and how do we stop this? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with a guest who says that special interests might bribe and buy politicians, but the big problem is that politicians are extorting businesses and contributors. He is the author of Extortion, How Politicians Extract Your Money, Buy Votes, and Line Their Own Pockets. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. You may have seen this topic and our guest featured on 60 Minutes recently. We do welcome your questions and your reactions about how business is conducted in Congress and in our nation's capital. Let's take David on Facebook, who says the important point is that the public good is not being served. Either way, this special interest crony capitalism needs to end. The problem is that there is so much in the way of the global economy. America needs to set a standard, not fall in line with the corruption and injustice. It fails us citizens to demand this change. Now we have named the problem. I'm sorry, I did a bad job reading that Facebook comment. But what is it that the average citizen can do, Peter Schweitzer?
Well, I think that's a very astute comment to take a global look, because there are two institutions that have sort of tracked over the years issues of perceived corruption. One of them is the World Economic Forum, the so-called Davos, that looks at global competitiveness of countries. And the other one is an organization called Transparency International, based out of Switzerland. And in both of those cases, over the last 5 years, the United States has gone from being in the middle of the pack in terms of how corrupt or non-corrupt are we among major industrialized companies. We are now at the bottom of the list. We are the worst performing. So I think the caller is right. There certainly is a perception out there that things continue to go awry in the United States. For citizens, I think it's very simple. It's number one, make clear to your elected officials that these issues matter. You know, they tend to hear from us when it relates to constituent issues, whether it's, you know, problem with the government or a benefit, and those are certainly legitimate reasons to contact your elected official. But if they never hear on these issues, they're going to assume that we don't care. And I think the second thing, as I said earlier, is have a zero tolerance policy. I mean, if you have an elected official who you may agree with philosophically, or you think they're doing a good job or benefiting you in the way you'd like, but they are engaging in this activity, you need to call them on it. Because if the expectation is, well, the other side needs to do it first, the other side needs to, in effect, disarm first, this is just going to continue. And trust me, in D.C., they know this, and they play to this. And it's part of the sort of repertoire of the professional wrestling performance that we see. So I think you've got to elevate these issues. There's a bill that was introduced, the Clean Campaign Funds Act, which is going to deal with leadership PACs and this loophole for self-enrichment. It's got three co-sponsors right now. Contact your member of Congress or your senator and let them know that you're interested and concerned about these kinds of issues.
Let's go to Mike in Nisita. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi, I listened to yesterday's show, too, whose guest described deception as a normal part of statecraft and a normal part of government. And combining those remarks with what I'm hearing from today's guest paints a very negative picture. I had high school civics about 50 years ago, and the picture we're seeing today is nothing like what was described in civics class, and probably nothing any similar to what's taught in civics classes today. And it seems the last serious attempt at any kind of reform in this country was the Feingold-McCain Campaign Reform Act. And it just seems to me that the scope and the amount of corruption has just snowballed in the last 50 years. And I don't know that our representatives really care what we think. It doesn't seem like they do.
Thank you, Mike. Peter Schweitzer, we talked about the NSA issues. Actually, it wasn't yesterday, but the day before yesterday. But in any case, is this activity relatively new, or does this date back years and years and years?
Well, I think I tend to believe that there's a certain constancy to human nature, and so people are prone in certain circumstances to do something that's going to benefit them, and they're going to do that. I do think it's gotten worse because the stakes have become so much larger. I mean, the average member of Congress 100 years ago did not have the power that an average congressman had now, and this I guess sort of now is reflective of my political philosophy. So full disclosure there, but I think as the size and scope of government has gotten larger, it creates greater opportunities for politicians to pick winners and losers. So the stakes become high. There's a lot of money at stake. That creates opportunities for extraction. It also creates opportunities for politicians to support crony capitalism. So I think for me personally, I think it is a function of the size and scope of government and their ability to pick winners and losers. And I think we are never going to erect a system that is perfect, human nature being what it is, but we can definitely put up barriers and walls that separate money making from lawmaking. And I think some of the reforms are sort of very basic. It's just that they're going to fight in tooth and nail for those reforms to take place. But I would end on this sort of, optimistic note as it relates to this subject. Elected members of Congress, by and large, want to keep their jobs. And if they feel that somehow their jobs are at stake or they might lose their job based on these kinds of issues, they will, kicking and screaming, enact these kinds of reforms. So we cannot reach the point to where we believe that elected members don't care at all what we think. They certainly will engage in deception. They certainly will try to point the finger to the other guy. But they do want to keep their jobs. And if push comes to shove, they will vote for reforms they don't want in order to keep those jobs.
Joan in Eau Claire, if you could be brief, please.
Good morning. Thank you to your guest for his comments on contacting our local officials. My opinion is that even though we can contact our local officials, until Citizens United is repealed, I can't see anything changing because they have so much control with this vast amount of money. It's not just individuals succumbing to these temptations of corruption. It's the whole party. Anyway, and that's my comment. Thank you so much.
Nothing will change unless Citizens United is repealed. What do you say to that, Peter Schweitzer?
Well, I think that, the problem predates Citizens United, and even if you were to repeal Citizens United, it would continue. Citizens United focuses on this issue of, corporations and labor unions to be able to communicate on specific ideas. They cannot make unlimited donations to a political candidate. What they can do, and there's certainly people who stand on both sides of this issue, what they can do if they believe strongly in the environment or on, lower taxes or whatever, they can certainly take out expenditures on those issues. That, to me, is just a subset of the larger problem, because that's not so much an issue of the self-enrichment or the kind of extortion or bribery we're talking about on specific pieces of legislation. That's about how political communication is done in this country. I think what we need to do is look at what is driving the rush of money into Washington, D.C., and it is because they can pick winners and losers, and they can help you or they can hurt you in a massive way. And whatever you set up, you get rid of Citizens United, you even have public funding of campaigns, you're still going to have people drawn to Washington trying to influence that process or being shaken down because the stakes have just become so enormously high.
In 30 seconds, what do you hope results from your book, Extortion?
Well, if nothing else, if we can close the loophole on leadership PACs, I think that would be tremendous. I don't think politicians need to be using campaign funds to live these wonderful lifestyles. They're public servants, and they ought to act like them.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Peter Schweitzer is the author of Extortion, How Politicians Extract Your Money, Buy Votes, and Line Their Own Pockets. Thanks to Bill Martins, to Christy Taylor, and to Robin Cherry for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. The Week in Review is coming up next. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.